History is often important in confirming science, proving whether it's right or false. And the Little Ice Age has been basically denied by the climate alarmists. These paintings are from various artists spread over 100 years apart of their world in the Little Ice Age. And the Little Ice Age we know was across America, Canada, it was across Europe and Russia, but it was also in South America and South Africa. It wasn't just local, as they claim. Although it lasted hundreds of years, that basically the Northern Hemisphere was cold and in this Little Ice Age, but the Southern Hemisphere was warmer than normal because the average temperature wasn't that cold. It was a bit colder, but not much. So there wasn't really a Little Ice Age. This is absolutely ridiculous. You can't maintain that situation where one major part of the globe, the Northern Hemisphere, is very cold and the rest isn't. Not for a long time, you can't do that. This 5,000-year temperature graph was developed using geological information. And what it shows is a medieval warm period that was warmer than today. And in a separate video, I've dealt with that, providing evidence that was the case all over the world. I will link that in the details below this video. But it also shows the recovery from the Little Ice Age. Now, I've got no doubt at all that the recovery from the Little Ice Age was supported by CO2. Because of the low levels we are at around about 285 parts per million, the extra CO2 would definitely be a greenhouse gas that had effect. So I've no doubt at all that that CO2 pumped into the atmosphere did warm. But how much was natural and how much was from CO2 is highly debatable. But the IPCC do not study natural warming or cooling and assume the Earth has suddenly stopped any natural changes. In effect, they are natural climate deniers. Why this is so important to the alarmists is because if there was a Little Ice Age and the Earth cooled, then it naturally started to warm again. In fact, it started to warm again over 100 years before the Industrial Revolution. So it was already warming. So today's warming really had mainly occurred by about 1940, 1950. And most of that must have been natural because the amount of CO2 we put into the atmosphere then was quite modest. It wasn't until the 60s and 70s that the mankind CO2 sort of surge really got going. And yet we've only increased temperatures since the Industrial Revolution by round about 1.1 degrees centigrade. But it seems that the alarmists want us to return to the really cold weather of the 1800s with parts per million of CO2 of around about 285 and very low crop yields. In effect, back to a CO2 drought. And that poses a question. Why are the IPCC denying natural climate change, like the medieval warm period and the Little Ice Age, by demoting both of them to just regional changes, whilst at the same time using just one weather event, such as a temperature on one day in the UK, as a significant indicator for the whole planet? The short answer is that the entire climate change movement is not about climate, but about the transfer of wealth from Western countries to the underdeveloped ones. But here I will give the actual facts and science to expose the IPCC and the climate alarmists. Well, in order for the IPCC to do their work, history had to be changed, and the start of that change can be pinned down to one graph by one man. He was a postgraduate university student who later obtained his PhD. Name, Dr. Mann. The graph, the hockey stick. The year, 1999. Well, you can see why it's called the hockey stick. A pretty slowly getting colder and colder scenario. No medieval warm period, no Little Ice Age, and then suddenly when mankind came along and replenished some of the CO2 that had been taken out of the atmosphere, well, then we get record temperatures, the like of which have not been seen, not just for 1,000 years now, by the way, as shown in this graph, but for tens of thousands or millions of years. That is the basis of the alarmism. And you should note here, the hockey stick was based on Northern Hemisphere data, basically from tree rings. I will give a link below this video to my video The Layman's Guide to the Hockey Stick, which explains in detail how this graph came about. It could not be seen that there was a medieval warm period when there were low CO2 levels, but it was hotter than today. So bye-bye, medieval warm period. And also, it could not be seen there was a little ice age, because obviously we wouldn't want to stay in it, and so to be recovering from it would be lateral. Bye-bye, little ice age. This is the 1990 US government's version of the world temperatures over the last 1,000 years. And this was changed to the hockey stick. So how were they going to sell this? Well, it was the IPCC to do the selling. The IPCC is a political body, and it's run and controlled by politicians, not the scientists. Each COP meeting produces a report, which is called the Summary for Policymakers, the SPM. And that report is totally controlled by the politicians, and it is that report that influences governments. Governments just read the summaries. They don't read the thousands and thousands of pages of scientific reports. No problem now. All you have to do is control the summary report for policymakers. Just look at the rules behind it. Well, this rule shows you are not allowed to go against the consensus. Everything has to be in line with the policy. That is politics controlling science. And they even publish things which go against the scientific papers from their scientists. I quote, "Changes are limited to those necessary to ensure consistency with the SPM report." That is the tail wagging the dog. That is total political control. This is a simple example where right from the beginning, the IPCC in their SPM report simply did the exact opposite of what the scientists had said. This NASA report on, for example, US temperatures shows a gradual increase in temperature till about 1940, with the 1930s being the highest decade, and then a reduction down towards the 70s when we had the little ice age scare, and then an increase again. That is before the hockey stick. And this is the same people reporting after the hockey stick. In order to stick to the agenda that temperatures rise with CO2, they lowered the temperatures of the past and actually increased them in the current. You can see the differences here. It was the hottest decade, the 1930s, but it's no longer. You see, if it was hotter in the 1930s when CO2 levels were very low, why would it be cooler now? Everything has to stick to the agenda. And if any scientific paper comes up that's inconsistent, it's not only censored within the IPCC, it's censored almost everywhere. They won't even properly discuss them. You see, if there was no problem with man-made CO2, there'd be no IPCC, and hence no gravy train, nor an easy means to transfer wealth to underdeveloped countries. So there is no misunderstanding. I wish to clear up any confusion and clarify my views on CO2. CO2 is a greenhouse gas that has helped, along with natural recovery from the Little Ice Age, to warm the planet. If CO2 was not there, then today the planet would be 25% colder and not habitable by any higher forms of life, because all the plants would have died. So if CO2 is a greenhouse gas, as I've said, why should we not be worried about adding more CO2 to the atmosphere and causing more warming? It's because as you add more of it, it has less and less effect. You can see here on the graph. If you increase it from today's value of, let's say, 420 ppm to 600 ppm, just look at the little difference it makes in effect. That's the nature of it. And in any event, it's good to add it. It's very beneficial to have some more CO2. Going back here 550 million years ago to the Cambrian period, when the biggest explosion of life on Earth occurred, that was in the oceans, CO2 levels were somewhere between 6 and 8,000 parts per million. And by the way, the oceans were the exact opposite of being acidic. Today, people worry about acidity when the CO2 is only 420 parts per million. quite ridiculous. And by the way, as the seas warm, they give off more CO2, they reduce CO2 in them. As they cool, it absorbs CO2, and the ice ages absorbed CO2 and then give it off afterwards. Life has absorbed CO2 throughout this time and buried it. Today we're at drought levels of CO2. In the Carboniferous period, this dip here, the trees and vegetations could not be absorbed by the bugs, so the trees collapsed and were buried. They buried the CO2. And in this time, all the coal in the world that we find today came from this one period. This is the fossil fuel period that we live off today. What happened was, after a while, the bugs wised up to the situation with the trees and started eating them. And so by doing that, they released the CO2 into the atmosphere, and it was no longer buried as it was before. So when you burn fossil fuels today, you're simply putting back into the atmosphere that has been taken out of the atmosphere. The baseline in this graph is the 3,000-year average temperature. It shows you the Roman warm period, and it shows you the medieval warm period, as well as the Little Ice Age. But this Little Ice Age didn't happen in all one continuous bit. In fact, we're going to colour in the other bit now, so you can see how it came about and what period it covered. By taking the 3,000-year average, you can see we're actually just coming out of it by 2006. So there has been a natural recovery, and without doubt really helped along by the CO2. However, there's going to be another huge factor I now have to introduce to that recovery to understand the warming we've had in the 20th century. John Christie, PhD, Professor of Atmospheric Science at the University of Alabama, applied the scientific method to CMP5, 102 predictions of temperatures, 1979 to 2016, by models from 32 institutions. He explained, "The traditional scientific method in which a claim and hypothesis is made and is tested against independent information to see if the claim can be sustained produce the following chart." Well, as this graph shows, with reality checked against the climate models of the alarmists, they're way off, really way off. In fact, to be fair, some of the scientists did tell the IPCC before COP26 in Glasgow that they should really report that the models are all running too hot. But of course, the IPCC just ignored their own scientists on that. But as I've said, the models are super inaccurate. But let's look at something here. And it's to do with the latest research on the sun and its effect on the atmosphere. Well, we do know that the sunspot cycle really was low in the Maunder minimum. We know that. And we know the Maunder minimum occurred when the Little Ice Age was on. That does not mean, in scientific terms, it's cause and effect. That does not mean that the Maunder minimum caused the Ice Age. It's an indication that it might have done. In truth, we have volcanoes, we have ocean currents, and we have solar influence, all combining in different patterns over different time periods. So one has to be very careful before drawing conclusions. But yes, okay, this is a pointer towards the sun causing major climate variation. Now, the alarmists have already discounted the sun, saying the actual effect per square meter is tiny. But I've already done a video on that using a Danish and Israeli scientist who showed they're wrong, that the sun is 4 or 5, maybe 6 times more effective as regards heating the planet than they think it is. However, the latest research was triggered by this graph. What it shows is that in this area, there's a broad compliance between the sunspots and the rising temperature. But then at this point, the temperature carries on, but the sunspots don't. There's some sort of discrepancy here. So a scientist started to attack this problem. Why was there this divergence? Well, to understand the divergence, we have to take a look at celestial mechanics. Don't worry, this is simple to follow. You probably think of the solar system now as a number of planets orbiting the sun. But in actual fact, that's wrong. They don't orbit the sun as such. You see, when any planet orbits its star, the planet certainly is put into orbit by the sun. but the planet also affects the Sun. And so in actual fact, the planet orbits on the center of mass between the Sun and the planet, just like this. This star wobble is how astronomers detect stars that have planets around them. When they wobble, they know there are planets there. So in effect, the Sun and the planet, both of them rotate around the barycenter, which means the Sun changes in respect to the planet. But our solar system is more complicated than that, while still keeping to the same rules. There are lots of planets and there are different masses. Jupiter, being 2.5 times the mass of all the other planets combined together, has a huge influence, and hence the path that the Sun takes is quite complicated, and it's not in 2D like this, it's in 3D. So on this diagram, you can see in the corner here the very complicated path that the Sun takes. It takes it in three dimensions. And don't forget, the planets do not orbit on exactly the same plane. So why am I explaining all this? It is simply because of this. These Sun wobbles actually change the distance between the Sun and the Earth, and therefore change the radiation. And believe it or not, the climate alarmists have never taken this into account until this scientist came along. Let's face it, studying climate is so many multiple disciplines, even in my own experience, and I've interviewed leading famous professors who've written alarmist books. They do not understand it all. They tend to be focused on a very narrow area. This is the problem with climate. There are just too many disciplines involved. Anyway, the fact is they didn't take this into account until this professor came along and did the work, and it's made a big difference. Her name is Valentina Sarkova, and she is from Northumbria University. She wrote an initial paper which caused uproar, a lot of protest, because if it was true that the wobble of the Sun could make a difference, then everything was up for grabs. She even had a paper withdrawn by a journal because of objections saying the calculations were wrong. But then she went on to write a paper and prove without doubt her calculations are correct. And in fact, she's done them for the last 2,000 years. In fact, they coincide with the actual climate so much. They even show a small period of cooling in the Roman warm period when the Romans had to stop expanding because of the weather. It was snowing too much, etc. It even shows that down to detail. And what it does is it explains the Little Ice Age. It even reinforces the medieval warming period. It proved the Little Ice Age was caused by a drop in activity of the Sun, the Maunder Minimum. This is what it shows for the last 100 years. It shows that about 60% of the warming comes from the changes in the Sun. And the other 40% comes from other factors, including, no doubt, CO2. Although, as we know, that's losing more and more its significance. But now let's return to the Little Ice Age. Was it worldwide? Or was it just the Northern Hemisphere alone for hundreds of years, as the alarmists claim? This paper by Schindel in 2001, published in Science Journal, does show that it was a temperature reduction all over the globe. But there is more than that, and what follows are some examples from the Southern Hemisphere. I am not going to bother with the Northern Hemisphere because there's overwhelming evidence. I mean, the revolts, the uprisings, the starvation, all this is well documented right around America, right around Europe, right around Russia. There is really no dispute about that between myself and the alarmists. So I'm going to concentrate here in the Southern Hemisphere because according to the alarmists, that wasn't affected by the Little Ice Age. Well, let's start with South America and the tropical Andes. Yes, tropical, because in the mountains there in the Andes, you have glaciers. And this research paper here showed how the Little Ice Age increased the size of the glaciers significantly. Direct evidence how it affected in the tropics. So let's head further south now to Chile. And there again in the Andes, we've got the glaciers repeating the same thing, showing up the Little Ice Age. And by the way, all these studies also are confirming the medieval warming period was worldwide. Just to drive the point home, another paper, this time from Briffa, and I quote, "Little Ice Age advance and retreat of the glacier Jorgmonti, Chilean Patagonia. This period of maximum glacier extend is in synchronicity with the Little Ice Age, 16th to 19th century, Matthews and Briffa, 2005. Let's now cross the globe to South Africa and find out what research has shown us there. As is the case with most of these studies, the South African study covered the medieval warm period, being worldwide, as well as the Little Ice Age. I will quote from their paper. I quote from the paper. The Little Ice Age in South Africa from around AD 1300 to 1800 and the medieval warming period from before 1000 to around 1300 are shown to be distinctive features of the regional climate of the last millennium. The climate of the interior of South Africa was around 1 degree centigrade cooler in the Little Ice Age and may have been over 3 degrees centigrade higher than at present during the extremes of the medieval warm period. So here we are again, confirming that the medieval warm period and the Little Ice Age are global. And by the way, that South Africa was 1 degree centigrade cooler is about the same as we've warmed since the Industrial Revolution, around about 1 degree centigrade. I could, of course, quote many other papers, but just to finish off this session, we'll go even further south. Let's go all the way down to New Zealand, because when you leave New Zealand, the next place further south is Antarctica. I am sorry that New Zealand is actually off this globe, but you get the idea of the location, really south. And yet again, scientific papers show the evidence of the Little Ice Age. I quote, the Mueller Glacier is one of 12 large lake terminating glaciers and has shrunk dramatically since the Little Ice Age, figs 1 and 2, which estimated to have occurred between 1450 and 1850 in the Southern Alps. I'm not going to bore you with any more evidence on this. The evidence is quite overwhelming, and I could have carried on for a long time with more and more evidence. The facts are the Little Ice Age was global, and so was the medieval warming period. So why is it that there is such opposition to accepting these as global? Well, the simple reason is this. If naturally we warmed to warmer than today in the medieval warm period, and then we cooled again in the Maunder Minimum and the Little Ice Age, then we warmed again, it's a perfectly natural cycle. Now, I am not saying that carbon dioxide has not contributed to the warming, quite the opposite. I think it's helped a bit, but it's not the major factor, and carbon dioxide does not drive the climate. There's actually no scientific evidence to back that up. What there are really models which are not proof. They are just forecast by people, all of which have been proven wrong time and time again. So going back to the paper I quoted from Valentina, what is she forecasting that is going to happen given her mathematical precision with which she has analysed the last 2,000 years? Well, here it is. Understanding that the sun cycles aren't just 11 years, there is the 350 to 400 year one. And putting all this together with the wobble of the sun, she is forecasting that we are going to be very cold in the next 30 years. Already, satellite observations of temperatures are showing that the world is not warm for 7 or 8 years and is actually in a downturn, a very slight one, since 2016. Now, this is weather. This is not climate. So it's just an indication and no more than that. It can't be used as proof that the world is cooling because you need a long time, a long period to do that. It's just an indication, but there are quite a few other indications going on at the moment. So we're going to have to see whether Valentina is right. If I wanted to use the same tactics as alarmists by using extreme weather changes to try to point to climate change, then I'd use ones like this, where the ice from 2012 to 2013 in the Arctic expanded enormously. But you can't do that. Again, that is weather. Valentina is predicting that the growing season for crops will get shorter. Instead of maybe them starting in March, they'll start in April, and we begin to see this change as we go into this solar minimum period. This is what she's forecasting. And because of all the other factors to do with alarmism, because of all the ridiculous nature and political nature of it all, I think he is probably right. So I, for one, am backing her. This incredibly stupid policy of net zero is totally unaffordable. It is impossible. Currently, the government claim it's something like $70 billion on 2019 prices. But in actual fact, it may be nearer to $200 billion a year. We simply can't afford it. The costs now of just what we're doing in emergency thing, and don't simply put it down to the Russian war with Ukraine. No, that has caused a temporary rise in gas prices. But the government has made us more dependent on gas because nuclear has been replaced with gas. The policy to reduce nuclear increased our use of fossil fuels. And as you build every single wind farm, if you treble them, you've got to treble the amount of gas as well, because the wind simply stops blowing for long times or will blow at very low level for weeks. And the loss of that power has to be replaced by a quick acting source, and that is gas. You couldn't make up how stupid this policy of net zero is. It will collapse because we simply can't afford it. And the great thing is that there's no downside to it. The extra CO2 that makes a marginal effect now is very much welcome.